A very good afternoon to our listeners. My name is Lucas Katenda, greeting you right from Eagle FM studio here in Windhoek. I have come here for no other reason but to continue with our program, Root Out Corruption from Namibia, brought to you by Eagle FM, sponsored by Konrad Adenauer Stiftung, supported by Forum for the Future. So I welcome you as we continue with our conversation. I will open for the next 30 minutes or so with statements and some teachings, and I will obviously open the line for the listeners to participate. Last time we discussed a lot about conditions under which corruption can ferment, can grow, can flourish, can become a culture, can become a routine, more especially when it has become chronic, and when people have not taken serious steps to make sure that corruption is prevented. Now, we continue today with our program, and in this episode, we shall be talking about conditions required to prevent corruption. We have seen under which conditions corruption can flourish, can remain there. Remember, we spoke so much about vigilance, effective countermeasures, multilateral and bilateral organizations. We spoke about combating corruption through building integrity and establishing credibility and determination and consistency in our approach. We spoke about reforming the individuals, institutions, institutional people need to develop countermeasures, need to implement, and that the personnel need to be reoriented and retrained. In other words, those people need to be retrained. We spoke about a number of bribery issues. Not generally bribery, but issues that are very complex and make the reform very difficult. And we speak about individual offices and agencies that they must not work in isolation, and there must be a way to monitor and evaluate the activities of both individuals and also institutions. Now, today we are going to continue discussing about systems in which individual offices, departments, agencies operate in isolation from one another, which tend to be more susceptible to corruption. What are we saying? Conditions required to prevent corruption. Generally, just a condition. And remember, I have mentioned that it is the principle of good governance that will help somebody to create these conditions. So, number one of those conditions required to prevent corruption is systems in which offices, departments or agencies operate in isolation from one another tend to be more susceptible to corruption. One reason may be that systems where individual elements operate in a coordinated fashion and communicate regularly with one another tend to carry mutual monitoring of both activities and individuals. So that was the paragraph we ended with somewhat last time. So we continue now that systems with operational transparency are less susceptible to corruption than those that operate in secrecy. Transparency is created by such elements as access to information, policies, and the activities of a healthy independent media. A free media is a powerful instrument not only for exposing corruption and holding those responsible legally and politically accountable, but also as for educating the public and instilling higher expectations of integrity. So, operational transparency, it is a principle of good governance to make sure that there is transparency as far as public activities, public finances are concerned, that are not meant for individual or private affairs, they should be dealt with in an operational transparency. And where there is operational transparency, there could be less susceptibility to corruption. But where there is a lot of secrecy, actually you are close to corrupt elements and corrupt transactions and corrupt activities of any kind, because who else sees what you do? Because there is a lot of secrecy. Therefore, operational transparency and operational secrecy, those 2 points. Operational transparency promotes good governance and promotes an attempt to prevent corruption, while operational secrecy promotes decay in a form of corruption. And therefore, in order to prevent yourself from being susceptible to corruption, please do away with secrecy in terms of operation of a public institution and promote, until you get used to, the principle of operational transparency. Then we must also be careful, or be concerned, not necessarily careful, that transparency is created by such elements as access to information policy. The secrecy will prevent you from giving information as required by the public. Access to information and activities of a healthy independent media. So, in government, in any public or even a private institution, there must be access to information policy, especially when dealing with the media. And hereby it is indicated that it is not just a media or charlatans hiding behind media and press freedom, but healthy, independent media. In other words, healthy, it means a media with a very good policy, editorial policy, a policy that seeks to inform the public, that seems to educate the public, that seems not to be catalyst for chaos and instability. Those must be promoted in a healthy democracy, and by so doing, whoever is in charge of public information must be released, because this is the only way to curb corruption. If you keep on saying the media is the enemy of the people, the more you give them weapons to begin being suspicious and even publish suspicious information. Better to tell them the truth. If they are healthy, they will report on the truth. But if they are unhealthy, it's another way, it's another story that can be dealt with on a different platform. Only that in this case, we are talking about a healthy independent media that when they inquire about a particular issue they have heard or they have read and they approach you for a question, please have what we call access to information policy. A free media is a powerful instrument not only for exposing corruption and holding those responsible legally and politically accountable, but also for educating the public and instilling a higher expectation of integrity. In other words, the media can be a powerful instrument, whether it is the print media, or it is electronic media, or it is social media. It's not only powerful in exposition or in exposure of corruption, but also they help in holding those that are legally and politically responsible to be accountable, and also in the same way, they are a powerful tool in being channels of education, in other words, educating the public, and also instilling and instigating, if you like, and agitating the public to think and to have expectation in higher of integrity. So what does it mean here? We are saying in order for you to prevent corruption in your institution, do away with secrecy and promote operational transparency. Number two, be able to have what we call access to information policy and be friendly, if you like, and if you will, to the healthy independent media. The media here must not think they are above the law or they are above criticism. We are only saying they must be healthy. A healthy media is that which is very objective in their reporting and making sure that they are not misrepresenting or misinterpreting or misguiding people with their reporting or editorial policies. Because the media is a powerful instrument, it can expose corruption, it can lead to those who are in political positions to be politically and legally responsible, but it is also good for educating the public and instilling the higher expectations of integrity. As you can see, and as you can hear now, we hereby talking about corruption. The best way is to prevent it, but we are using the media platform, just as we are doing now. Secondly of what we are discussing today, there is what we call public trust in government, anti-corruption agencies, and anti-corruption policies and measures is key when the country invites the public to take an active role in monitoring and performance of its government. What do we mean? the public trust in government, the nation, the society, the people have to trust in government. Okay, the anti-corruption policies, agencies, and the anti-corruption policies and measures, those are the key. Yeah, it's a condition. Can you hear? Conditions to prevent corruption is when you have the public trust in government, is when you have anti-corruption agencies, is when you have anti-corruption policies and measures. They are the key, because the country invites through these instruments and interventions, invites the public to be active and take active role in monitoring the performance of their own government. So it takes, therefore, a political will, institutional ability, integrity to excuse reform to fight corruption. It takes what? Political will, institutional ability, and integrity. How do we promote public trust in government, anti-corruption agencies, anti-corruption policies and measures? Only when there is a political will. A political will to make sure that our country is corruption-free. That our institutions are corruption-free. Not only corruption in a sense of using money and properties, but also whatever we do in terms of our meetings, in terms of our resolutions and so on, we must not promote unethical and immoral behaviors. But when we have a political will, when we have the ability, the institutional ability, the know-how, when you have a person in charge of a particular ministry, in charge of a particular department, in charge of a particular branch, in charge of a particular office, however small, this person must be able, even from governmental level, we need presidents who are able. We need traditional leaders who are able. We need church leaders, if you like, religious leaders who are able. We need people with ability. Otherwise, if we do not have people with ability, we will be governed by those who are ill-educated, ill-prepared, ill-trained, and by so doing, they will not even detect anything that will make them being suspicious that something is fishy here. We need people with intellectual acumen, if you like, and they should be able to even notice that something is not right or something wrong is about to happen, and therefore I must take action before it happens. So, we need that. We don't need just political will. We don't need just institutional ability. We need also people of integrity. People who cannot manage their own lives. People who cannot manage their own families. People who cannot manage their own time, even their own bodies. Why do we think we can trust them with our national responsibility when they have failed even to make their own bed? When they have failed to make their own bed, why do we have to think like that? Therefore, it takes political will, institutional ability, and integrity. People of higher morals, people of higher ethics and etiquette, people of values, people of great cardinal virtue, to execute the reforms and therefore to fight corruption. This is what we need. We need people with good hearts and willing hands and willing to fight corruption through whatever available means and to the best of their ability. Political will is required to develop. Required what? To develop and then to implement and then to sustain what the strong measures needed to identify, number one, and to eliminate corrupt values and behaviors. Political will is necessary to develop the measures, to implement the measures, to sustain the strong measures that are needed, one, to identify, and they are not just needed to identify, but they are also needed to eliminate corrupt values and behaviors. We need politicians who are resolved, in other words, both through legislative means, through executive means, even through political groupings, through their own political homes, to make sure, and there must be agreement, even among political parties, there must be agreement among political parties when it comes to some things. Namibia, as a nation, need to agree on some things. And it doesn't matter whether you are a governing party or you are a political party. I mean, just a political party that's not in government, usually called opposition. There must be some things in which we must together say yes. When it comes to this, there is no negotiation, because this is threatening the existence of Namibia as a state. And in areas where we need to agree, it's, for instance, fighting corruption and promoting good governance. So whether you are in ruling ruling party, or whether you are in opposition party, at this stage when corruption is really discussed or being addressed and so on, we must all find the common ground, because corruption is a common enemy and must be fought by all the Namibian people. Now, I mentioned, when we talk about the political will, is to do those. Institutional ability is required for what? To ensure that political commitments are actually carried out. It's one thing to make political commitments. I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this. But if you do not have able cadres, able comrades, as you call them in your parties or whatever their name you, whatever the political name you call, the title you call your people, there must be institutional ability. They should be able to carry out these things. Sometimes people are good singers and good hand clappers, but give them the office, they will not be able to execute the task in a timely and effective manner. Often in the face of entrenched informal organization within public institution, intent of blocking or limiting reforms. Remember, you are dealing with certain problems, formal organization. No, it must be done this way. It must be done this way. And therefore, sometimes such things may block the activities of the political will. So in that sense, you need people who are either able to read, because if you put somebody in charge of a particular institution, but this person doesn't even understand. There was a time I had to attend a particular meeting where it is stated we must follow the government treasury instructions. When I looked at this government treasury instructions, it is a huge document, very huge. And somebody may not just be at ease with it, but it is the legal document that one need to follow whenever you are dealing with government resources. And now a person with ability is required to read and to interpret and to apply the principles contained therein and the procedures contained therein, that policy, so that at the end of the day, there is no limitations and there is no blockage to the necessary and required reforms. Therefore, curbing systemic corruption is a challenge that requires stronger measures, more resources, and a longer time frame than most politicians and corruption fighters will acknowledge or can even afford. Can you see? Corruption is a serious, deep-seated, hidden virus. And can you hear the United Nations saying, curbing systemic corruption, it's a challenge. It's a challenge that will require stronger measures, more resources, and even a longer time frame than what most politicians think or corruption fighters will acknowledge and can even afford. So this is one thing. So we need to fight corruption from all levels. And therefore, fundamental, those are two things I have mentioned. Number three, fundamental to all reforms, my friends, however, is integrity and the perception of integrity, especially at the highest level of government and in entities responsible for anti-corruption measures. Without integrity, any steps taken to combat corruption will lack credibility, both as positive examples of how public officials and institutions should behave and as deterrents to corrupt behavior. When we are talking about integrity, obviously we are talking about the ability to be there, and your yes is always yes, and your no means no, and you are not easily manipulated, you are not easily misled, you are not easily misguided. In other words, you have a strong mind. You have a strong mind. This is what we need in order to fight the corrupt activities and root it out from the face of Namibia. So credibility. So can you see? Political will must be there. Institutional ability must be there, as well as integrity must be there. Then you are close to eliminating corruption. So if you do not have the political will, if you are politically unwilling even to listen to what people are saying when it comes to corruption, if you are unwilling to listen to what ordinary people are saying in the society, if you are unwilling, we are in trouble. If you have no able cadres to carry out and implement your political will, policies, and governances, you are doomed. And if you are people of no integrity, just starting from your personal life, how are you a person of integrity? In some countries, people do not gamble around. We cannot have leaders, for instance, who are during the day honorable and during the night dishonorable, finding them in the bars, and participating in illicit activities and the behaviors pertaining to sexual immorality and all these things. No, we need people of integrity. And if you go back to culture, there is a way of how people must behave, especially those in leadership. Okay? So those three things must be the conditions under which corruption must be prevented. What? Political will. I underline. Political will. I will open the line soon. Political will. There must be institutional ability. When I say ability, I really mean a person has a know-how. The person is skilled. The person has experience. The person has knowledge about the subject matter at hand. And therefore, you can give this person the task. Not all these matters of people just appointed left, right, and center, even when they have no energy, even when they have no capacity, even when they have no courage, even when they have no readiness or sense of being loyal to the nation, and therefore they must work very hard to make sure that the nation is served. Those are not the people we must appoint nor give them responsible positions, but people who are able, and therefore people of integrity, people who should be able really to work, and whatever it means so. Whether it is true, it is true. If it is false, it is false. If it is white, it's white. It's yellow, it's yellow. If blue, it's blue. We don't change a person with consistency. Yeah? Those are the people with honesty. People who can be trusted. Those are the people we are talking about. And before I open the lines again, somebody was calling. Deterrence is a single but important element of anti-corruption strategy. By definition, almost corruption is calculated and premeditated activity and can be deterred. To deter means to preempt something in a way that it may not happen, to deter something. So in other words, corruption is known to be calculated, it's known to be premeditated, and therefore one can be prudent enough and deter it that it may not happen. So deterrence includes not only conventional prosecution and punishment, but also administrative, regulatory, financial, economic deterrence. So it is not just a question of corruption has happened and therefore prosecution, but you can regulate, you can administer some measures, you can deal with financial policies and guidelines and economic principles to deter that corruption may not happen. So corruption stands when personal, where personal or corporate risks, uncertainties and punishments are minimal, corruptions tend to increase. So when there is no personal risk, that if you do this, it may tend to be this, and you may be arrested for that. If people don't feel the burden that it is a risky behavior, if I do something like this, uncertainties about what to do when corrupt activity have happened, what must we do? Must we tell this person? Must we keep quiet? Must we just remove? So if there are lots of uncertainties, in other words, and punishments are minimal, where there is no particular punishment that you do this, we will take action against you. So it is obviously clear that you are fermenting, you are helping to ferment and to sow the seed of corruption. So you could use economic deterrence, financial deterrence, regulatory deterrence, and administrative deterrence. Where personal or corporate risks, uncertainties, punishments are minimal, corruption will increase because nobody wants to take action. Conversely, reforms that increase uncertainty and the risk of criminal punishment and financial losses tend to reduce corruption. Why? Reforms that increase uncertainty. What might happen if this happened to me, if I do this? The risk of criminal punishment, okay? That I may be liable for arrest. I may be arrested. Or we may lose, financially speaking. So we must do this in order that we may not lose our financial ability. Those things will help reduce corruption. Generally, reforms must be broad-based or systemic, or corrupt conduct may simply be displaced into other areas of activities. So, what are the conditions that may help to prevent corruption once more again, as we have just looked at a while ago? I said there must be no secrets, transparency. There must be government must be in a position to be trusted. Anti-corruption agencies must be there, as we have in Namibia: Anti-Corruption Commission, the Office of the Ombudsman, the Prosecutor General, the Minister of Justice, and our judiciary, and so on. We need, therefore, three things: political will, institutional ability, and integrity to fight corruption well. But if you are fighting corruption with a person who himself is corrupt, even at home, it will be very difficult for us to fight corruption with this person at a national level. And obviously, we would like just now to open the line that people may start calling and give us your views. We have 20 minutes.
Eagle FM, welcome to the program.
Yes, good afternoon, Bishop. I don't know how, we have so many titles, I don't know how to...
What other titles do I have?
The doctor!
the doctor is just a prophecy. I'm yet to get there.
Uh-huh.
Actually, I am just Lucas Katenda, obviously by the church. I am a bishop of the Reformed Evangelical Anglican, yes.
That one also actually describe the attributes that you possess and how you are giving unto us.
Thank you very much. Please go ahead, bring your ideas or questions.
The political will,
yes,
might be there, but then the other challenge is the technical will.
Mm-hmm.
When I look at what you are saying, Bishop, is that and what the Minister of Mines was giving a feedback today,
mm-hmm,
is on the pollution license and concessions and things like that. It was actually emphasizing on the technical way,
mm-hmm,
that we, like you said, institutional ability.
Mm-hmm.
And then he is sort of challenging the business community, our own local business community, on that thing. So he said, why do you sell these things? You get access to them, and then you sell them to outsiders. So now, and he was saying that those framework, those frameworks are there. It's a political will, one so to say, and it all don't might be lacking. But what do you do about these things? Because now, in many cases, even fishing quotas, because obviously they got access to them. Maybe they, I don't know how they got them, maybe legitimately, legally. But then, you always hear that they have given it out, sold them out to the outside. So lastly, the other one is the perception. Maybe because some of the things is true that there might be some kind of just perception, and then therefore the credibility of the institution, for example, let's say the government or justice system or any other system, that we think that yes, somewhere, somehow there might be, they need some reforms, but that the perception that is created from the public opinion, it could also be, you know, because most of these things are not challenged, nobody care to come and say no, electrify and things like that. So this is, what do you think should be done there? Because there's a lot of false perception and things like that, and it also destabilizes some of the institutions that are trying to do their best. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Yes, thank you for that question. What must be done? I keep on saying those three elements will help us. Political will, our politicians, our political leaders, they must be willing to fight corruption. And relatively, we can say there is a level of political will that corruption must be rooted out from the face of Namibia. You can then create a policy, but institutionally speaking, okay, a policy, institutionally speaking, that will help prevent corruption. But the person you appoint to head this institution, is she or he able to read and therefore translate and apply the principle contained therein?
Welcome to the program.
Hello, Dati. How are you?
Fine. Thanks. Yourself?
I'm good. Yeah, we're talking about corruption here. I understand you, everything what you're saying. But the big problem we have in the country, we have no punishment. People are stealing it and they just suspend and go home and eat his own money, the one is stealing it. To keep a person in the prison did corruption, you know he eats a red of money, he go and take a lawyer to defend you, he's stealing already. We need to take action. Punishment to say, no, if you did corruption like this, you take your house, you take everything, you're not put in jail, and then you give you a job to go work for the government. That is your punishment for such a... If we have that action, people will be stopped. Now it's no one will be stopped because no punishment. I can steal it and then I take a lawyer. That's why corruption is keeping going, one stop for this country, because it's no punishment, make people to be scaring it, to be afraid.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tate.
I have actually spoken about deterrence. It's a single but important element for anti-corruption strategies. We must deter corruption from happening. And one of the deterrence method is to punish the perpetrators. Okay? But remember, Namibia is a country based on the rule of law. And nobody must be proven tried just because the public is crying and so on. There must be a jurisprudence. There must be a way to bring the case before the courts. The courts must listen to it and they must weigh everything, because remember, they can also, mistakes can be done and somebody can be discredited and be damaged. Yet this person was not guilty. But we are not saying there is no guilty part in corruption. There is always a guilty part, but how do you determine that this is really the guilt? Because in my view, speaking from medical point of view or health point of view, we deal with the root cause. We always want to go to the root cause. Okay, even when we are talking about fish rot and whatnot, we will be comforted when we hear, where did it start? How did it start? Who were they? What facilitated these things? Not just what we see, because it is possible that while we are concentrating on this, then another corrupt activities are happening already, because we have not dealt with the root cause. Okay? In the military way, those of you who come from the military, you have to be careful that where there appear to be a battle, it's only a battle somewhere there, but the real battle is going to happen just behind you. While you are running there, then the real battle starts. From where you are running from, to think you are going to prevent something there. So, the rule of law requires that no one is guilty until so proven by the competent court. Yeah, so that is another legal, very constitutional. But there must be a deterrence when we found out in a clear terms, beyond reasonable doubt, as they say, that this person is guilty because of A, B, C, D, E, F, G. This person is guilty. Then that person must be punished, obviously, with a purpose to deter others that they may not follow suit. But concerning the administration of justice again, it is not just a one night, a one day stuff. Somebody must dig down and go to the root cause. What happened at the very beginning? What is the genesis of the matter before it comes here? And if what we see is only the beginning, is the only thing that we can say, well, fine. But jurisprudence, you need to know what happened in the beginning.
Welcome to the program.
Just something quickly.
Please go ahead.
That administration justice there.
Yes.
Because we have read from time to time from Tatenoa, the Anti-Corruption Commission, that when somebody say, for example, was working in an institution like say a public institution.
Yes.
And that person is alleged to have committed some kind of fraudulent and things like that. Like in the case of the staff who were working in the parliament.
Yes.
Now, usually that administrative, whether it's misappropriation or fraudulent, you know, those administrative things.
Yes.
So usually that person goes to, if you go to the anti-corruption, they say, no, this has to be dealt with by the institution. But maybe because, let's agree, they are also trying to reform, so that person, because usually once the person goes, and even the Minister of Energy today, that Tome Arwendo mentioned it, you see, the person who was so investigated in this case, resigned from the institution. And therefore, as per the public service staff rule, or whatever the case might be, they have no legal obligation to get that person. But even though you mentioned that the anti-corruption is following it up and things like that. Can you see those kind of somehow contradiction or either delay and things like that? So thank you, Bishop. Let me know.
Thank you very much.
Yes, and that's why we mentioned that in order to avoid, to remove susceptibility, there must be flexibility in rules and in hierarchy. When things are this and things are that, and you have to go there, and it is tiring, it is draining you, you may, even if you have evidence, you may just end up saying, no, I am not going to participate in this thing anymore. And then corruption will go unpunished, unnoticed, because it takes time. That is why, even with this fish rot thing, the way the public has attacked it, and the way I am foreseeing it. I am foreseeing a protracted something. And by the time we come to the conclusion of this thing, some people are dead. Because the way we think, we are already saying they are guilty already. And they say the public can complain. People are guilty already if you want to say so. But people who know the law, and my friends, these are the laws. They will keep saying these people are innocent until competent court declares without reservation that this person and that person are guilty of A, B, C, D. For now, they are accused only. For now, they are suspected only. It is the legal process that allows these things. But the way we think, we have come to conclusion this has happened. But how do you know it has happened? The only person who must tell us are the investigators, are the interpreters of the law, are those who dig down and go to the root cause of the thing. When did it happen? How did it happen? Who were there? Are these people the only smart people we have in the country, that therefore they are guilty of this thing? Therefore, we must crucify them. Are they the only people involved? Everybody else was just sleeping or whatever. If your mind and your brain is working, you have to think that something deeper than what we see now might have happened in terms of the law, in terms of the policies, in terms of governance instruments. Something must have happened. But who has got the right to go down into this whole matter are those who have the investigative ability, and those who are able to understand the law and apply the law, and therefore will be able to say, something is fishy here. We need more information about Okay, we now see this thing came in the hand of A. When it came in the hand of A, it came from where? Where are the feet of this thing? Footprints. It came from this office. And from that office, where is it? It came from, it came into that office from where? You follow it, you follow it, you follow it until you get the root. This is what even has happened. It is normal. It is a commonsensical thing to do, to follow something until you reach the roots. The trouble with us is that we think it is we are overnight, we wake up one day, this is the thing, everybody is corrupt, we must arrest them. If we do so, we are rendering our society into a banana state, and we may end up arresting each other for nothing and make other scapegoat. And therefore, we must try and rely on our judiciary system. Whether the judiciary system will tell the truth and be fair and apply justice as it should or not, then corruption is not only about those who are arrested, then it's about also those who are misinterpreting and therefore misapplying the law and therefore being unfair and being unjust, if it goes to that extent. And that's why it is necessary, when you say deterrence, deterrence is to quickly identify the problem, quickly identify the root causes, quickly identify people who have participated, whether they are initiators or they are accomplices or they are recipients or they are in terms of active and passive corruption. Then you take action against them according to the law. Because you have initiated, we will punish you for A. Because you have promoted the giving of corrupt bribes or whatever, we are this. Because you have accepted, we are this. Now when we are hearing all these people have this, active and passive, who has given who? Who has given who? Is it Now, the board of this company, who's supposed to be having a fiduciary responsibility, sit the CEO, is it the people who are applying for this and that? Who is who in this whole matter? Then if you have all of this, then you can say, aha, I will take action against you. And then when you have taken action, others will be scared. Others will be scared. And they will not dare to try anything that is corrupt. Now that we have come to almost to the end of our program, we only have 1 minute, some 40 seconds. How do we do this when it comes to conditions to deal with corruption? We need conditions under which corruption prevails. We must know them. And under which we can prevent corruption, we must know them. And we must also take note of stakeholder. Okay? We must be able to deal with what? To deal with stakeholders, people who are concerned about corruption. And we will be kicking off the next episode with involving key stakeholders, participation of civil society, for instance, in assessing the program of corruption and in formulating and implementing reforms is now seen to be as important element of anti-corruption strategies. Civil society, like what we are doing now, the Konrad Adenauer Stiftung, the Forum for the Future, from the church point of view that I am a church leader, we must not just be limited to speakers, being speaking and speaking and speaking endlessly, but we must also be able to participate in helping the formulation of the reforms necessary to prevent, if you like, corrupt activities. Anti-corruption measures and the commitment needed to make them work must be based on full assessment of the extent of corruption and its harmful effects. The participation of civil society is of vital importance. Nobody must be left behind when it comes to the fighting of this disease, of the fighting of this evil practice. Policies, practical measures are most likely to succeed if they enjoy the full support and participation, ownership of the civil, of the citizens, of community, of the society. Finally, only well-developed and aware civil society ultimately has the capacity to monitor and anti-corruption efforts, to monitor anti-corruption efforts, to expose and to deter practices that are corrupt and where measures have been successfully and credibly established that institutions are not corruption, are not corrupt themselves. So in other words, only if we are not corrupt that we can talk about fighting corruption from within ourselves. Now we have come to the end of our program, and I will pedagogically speak about involving the key holders in the next edition. Until next time, I am Lucas Katenda on behalf of the Eagle FM and Konrad Adenauer Stiftung. It's a goodbye.